Okay, pre-Pesach Shir, Tavshin Samaches. We have two basic agendas today, and they're not exactly related, but we cannot dispense with the first one because it's too basic to understanding the Haggadah. First, what we're going to do is we're going to try to decipher the order of the Haggadah, because all the Minhagim of the night are called a Seder. There's an order, not just to the order of the whole evening, but to the Haggadah itself. There's a very specific order that was followed in the writing of the Haggadah, and it's not evident at first glance. So what we're going to do is spend the first 20 minutes or so asking a few questions that pop out at us about the order of the Haggadah, and then finding the key that helps us understand how the Haggadah was written and what they were trying to achieve. The second half of the class will be more philosophical. We are attempting to understand a few things. Number one, when did the Geula take place exactly? Because you know it went in stages. There was the Shechting of the Korban Pesach, then there was the Makas Bechoros, then Mitzrayim told them to leave, and then they actually did leave much later the next day, when it was bright, broad daylight. So when was the actual point of the Geula? And in attempting to understand this, we will distinguish between two words. You know, we always work with little words here. The nuances that distinguish Geula from Pidyon. Okay, Goel from Podeh. At the end of Magid, the bracha we make is about the Geula and the Pidyon. What's the difference between them? And hopefully with this we'll get a little bit of an insight into the five Lashonos. Votseisi, Vitzalti, Vigaalti, Velakachti, Vehevesi. Okay, so those are our objectives. So in terms of understanding the Haggadah, what we're going to do is start with a few questions. All right? Now, we've done this in the past, but it bears repeating because we need to have this focus so we understand where we're at as we go through the Haggadah. We normally think that the whole Magid section, which is what we're focusing on, the whole Magid section is essentially the story of the Nisim of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But that isn't the case, because there is a lot in the Magid section that is not about the Nisim and not about the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. We normally think that we begin with the questions, Manishtana Halayla Hazeh, and then we continue Avadim Hayinu, that's the answer. But on second glance, it's not so simple. First of all, let's understand Manishtana. My grandfather always used to tell us, and we spent so many siddurim there, which I treasure in my memory forever, because they were always they were a lot of fun. Of course, we had a lot of cousins and everything. But the ideas we heard were jewels. And my grandfather used to say that Manishtana is not a question, how is this night different than any other night? Because it's obvious how everything's different. How isn't it different? I mean, it's not a rhetorical, simple, obvious question. It's really an exclamation. What the youngest or whoever's asking says is, Ma nishtana halayla hazeh, how different is this night? How unusual is this night? It's an exclamation of a certain amount of awareness, a certain amount of astonishment that there's nothing similar in this night to any other night. In fact, this whole night is a night of contradictions, and things we do tonight are not similar to other things we do tonight. For example, we act on the one hand as servants, as slaves, and we eat matzah and maror, and at the same time we lean and we dip, so we're acting like kings. So even tonight it's a series of contradictions. What are we? What are we remembering? Are we remembering that the identity of the Jews is a slave people that were redeemed? And now they went from slaves to free men? Or are we saying that most of our history we're destined to be slaves, and that's what we're remembering and that's what we're accepting? Or are we saying that despite the fact that we're slaves, we are also free in our minds and in our heads, we are the king, we are on a higher level? Well, how do we put together these two contradictions? Who are we? How do we see ourselves? And at the end of Magid, we make a bracha on Geula and Pidyon, and they relate to both aspects. What changed? Now, we know essentially that the only thing that really changed for us on Pesach is who our master was. Right? We went from eating matzah, which is the bread of slaves, to matzah, which is the bread of freedom. And the only thing that really changed was who we were devoted in the service of. Right? From Paro to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The first experience we had with matzah was Paro's slave bread. And the second experience we had with matzah is that the redemption came so fast that it didn't have time to rise because we're now HaKadosh Baruch Hu's avadim. So we understand that that's the only little thing that changed here. But in addition to that, who are we? Are we therefore slaves forever? Is our identity basically slaves, just depending on who? Or is identity free people? So that's the question. So we think that we're going to give the children or the youngest or the questioner an answer. So we say, Avadim Hayinu, and it sounds like the beginning of the story, except there's one problem. This story lasts for 12 words, and then we digress for a very long time into all kinds of other stuff. So, Avadim Hayinu Leparo B'Mitzrayim, we were slaves to Paro. Hashem took us out of there, B'yad Chazaka U'Bezro Netuya, with an outstretched arm and a strong hand. Now, stop, that's it. No more story. Now we go into a moral, philosophical lesson. If Hashem would not have taken us out, we would still be there. Okay, therefore, even if we're all chachamim, we're talmid chachamim, we're educated, we're scholars, we understand everything, we know the whole Torah, we've learned the story 1,000 times, we have a mitzvah, l'saper b'yitzias Mitzrayim, to tell the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim. So, right here, this is not the story, this is stating that what we are about to do is fulfill the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. Obviously, that's what it is. And it's clear from this that it has nothing to do with who's telling the story. Whoever's telling the story could be as educated, they could be a scholar, they could have told the story a billion times already. That's irrelevant. There's a mitzvah to tell the story again on this night. So we're making it clear right from the beginning that we were slaves and we were freed, and that's not the story, that's the reason we have a mitzvah to start telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, do we get into the story? Not at all. We digress. Masa b'Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and there are five of them learning in Bnei Barak, and they were telling the story all night until Kriya Shema Shel Shachris, until it was light enough to say Kriya Shema Shel Shachris. So, is this the story? No. This is an extension, an application, a demonstration of the law. That even if you're brilliant, and even if you're the sage of the generation, the more you tell the story, the better it is. In other words, there's no limit to how much you can talk about. You can talk about it from the minute you start the Seder, until the morning. That's the extent of the mitzvah. So again, this isn't the story, this is a halacha. How much do you tell the story? And who tells the story? What are the parameters of this mitzvah? Now, do we get into the story? No, we don't. We say, I'm a Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, I'm like 70, and all my life I wasn't sure what were exactly the limitations of this and the demands of this mitzvah. So he said, it says in the Torah in Devarim, there's a halacha, Shenemar, it says in Devarim, Leman tizkor es yom tzeitcha mi'eretz Mitzrayim. Kol yimei chayecha. There's a halacha. You have to remember the day you went out of Mitzrayim, all the days of your life. And he didn't know. He was wondering, what is the halacha? Does it mean you have to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim during the day? Or do you also have to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim at night? And Benzoma darshins, and we accept that you have to mention and remember Yetzias Mitzrayim in the daytime and in the night. Now, what this means is, today, that we say Kriya Shema in the morning, and we say Kriya Shema at night, in Mariv, and the reason women say Parshas Tzitzis, which doesn't have any relevance to us, is because Yetzias Mitzrayim is mentioned in it, and we're fulfilling the obligation of remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim, and Benzoma Darshan, when it says Kol Yimei Chayecha, that teaches us that you have to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim every morning and every night, because if it would have just said Yimei Chayecha, that would be the morning, but the word Kol add something else, or the night, and then also in addition, this is a further discussion, you don't only talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim in this world, now, in our present history, but even in Yemos HaMashiach, we're also going to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim, even though it'll no longer be that relevant, we'll have our own geula, but still. So again, first of all, is this the story or is this halacha? It's halacha, and the halacha is very important, which isn't clearly stated here. there is a mitzvah to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim every single day of your life. And this is why we fulfill it in Shema. However, what we're learning here is that the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim on Seder night is not the same halacha as Laman Tizkor, that you should remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. Laman Tizkor is you should remember it for yourself. Sipur is you must tell the story to others. Of course, first and foremost, your children. But if there's no children, just anyone who could be a philosophical child of yours, a protege, somebody who's learning from you. So he, or a Talmud, any student. So the point is that we're distinguishing. Yes, you have to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim twice every single day. That's the final decision. Don't confuse that with the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is a special obligation tonight to tell it to others. Okay? And then we continue. Do we go into the story? No, we don't get into the story. We start, we talk about that there were four children. Now, what is this? Clearly the four children, and we spoke about this in Parshas Bo. If anybody wants a review on the Chacham and the Rasha and the Tam and Ze and Zos, we spoke about this in Parshas Bo. It's online. In any case, we won't do that again. But clearly these four children are, we are not being told, you know, this is not the story. We are again being told that there are four different types of questions, and you have an obligation to tell each and every one the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim according to where they're coming from and what they can hear and what they need to hear. And the Torah actually points out for us and gives us specific guidelines how you answer the question. So again, this isn't the story. This is halachic. You have to tell it to every child on their level. Here are guidelines. You cannot ignore any child. You cannot renege on your obligation to tell the story of Mitzrayim, even if someone doesn't ask you. The whole Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is an obligation on the previous generation to make sure they seek out and tell the story, repeat it over, explain it, its implications to the next generation. By the way, I've said this every year. My grandfather always used to say that don't make a mistake. The obligation of the first night, even more importantly than the second night, because that's, you know, the second night of Pesach is just for us here in America. But the first night is Midoraisa, and the halacha is v'higadet l'bincha, you must tell your children, and it isn't v'higadet l'avicha ulimecha, you must tell your parents. So he always said to the children, save your divrei Torah for the lunch meals, for the second night. You can say a few Seder night, but it's not the mitzvah. The mitzvah is for me to tell you and for you to listen to me. That's a mitzvah doraisa. So be careful with that. Okay? So in any case, clearly the four children here is again halachic. Who you tell, it's all about our obligation to tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So now do we get into the story? Okay, here we go. Yachal mi Rosh Chodesh. Maybe we should start telling the story of Pesach from Rosh Chodesh. There's a reason to assume from the halacha, the way the pasuk is written, that maybe it starts Rosh Chodesh Nisan. No, no, we learn not, if that isn't the case, because it says by Yom Ha'hu, on that day. So maybe that day, the beginning of the day. So which day? The 14th of Nisan is the day they prepared and slaughtered and ate the Korban Pesach. Notice in the Chumash, by the way, not that we won't go into it now, but there are, in a sense, two Yom Tovim. There's a Yontif called Chag HaPesach, and it only takes a few hours. And it's on the 14th of Nisan when we prepare, shecht, and eat the Korban Pesach. On the 15th of Nisan begins Chag HaMatzos, which lasts for 7 days. Okay? And we now call the Yontif Chag HaPesach, and Hashem calls the Yontif Chag HaMatzos, because we are thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for skipping over, and Hashem is thanking us for our devotion to follow Him into the desert with no food. It calls it Chag HaMatzos. However, there is a slight discrepancy if you look at the way that the Chumash talks about it. In any case, maybe Ojom on the 14th. No, that's not when you start telling. That's not when you have the obligation of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, because the Talmud said, Talmud Lomer Bavur Zeh. They're quoting a pasuk, which we will see numerous times in the Haggadah. And the pasuk is, V'higadet l'bincha, b'yom ha'hu le'mor, Bavur Zeh, asa Hashem li b'tzeisi mi'mitzrayim. You should tell your children on that day saying, on account of this, Hashem did great miracles when I left Mitzrayim. The word Bavur Zeh in the Pasuk, Bavur zeh, because of this, something you can point to. So the halacha is bavur zeh. You have to tell your children when you can point to something. So that means bishah sheyesh matzah umaru munachem lefanecha, when you have matzah mar in front of you, which means you can only, the obligation begins at the time of the Seder when matzah mar is in front of you. Again, this is halachic. When exactly do you begin the story? Now, once we've finished all of this, do we finally get to the story? Yes, mazel tov. Mitchila, ovde avodah zarah, hayu avosim. Here is the actual story. Okay? Now, this story goes on for quite a while, and it tells you all the details of how they went to Mitzrayim, and how they suffered there, and how they called out, and how Hashem took us, and outstretched arm, and all of that. And then you get into Damtar Deakinim, all the Nisim, and then Rabbi Yossi Haglili and Rabbi Lazar used to say that it wasn't just 10 Nisim, it was much more Nisim. Each Nis was really compounded by 5 other Nisim, 4 other Nisim, it was 200, 250 Nisim, etc. And then you do Dayenu, how many Nisim Hashem has done for us, Dayenu, which we've spoken about also numerous times. And finally, after all of this, you've just gone through all of the Nisim, and it sounds like we're culminating Dayenu, all the Nisim, and all of a sudden, we backtrack, and we find a section here, which should have been way in the beginning. Rabban Gamliel used to say, whoever hasn't said Pesach Matzah Mara, he's not Yotzei Zchiyuv tonight. You have to point to Pesach and say why we eat it. Today is the chicken bone or whatever. It was the Korban Pesach. Point to the matzah, say why we eat it. Point to the Mara and say why we eat it. Now, where should this section have been? Which part of the halachic section? Yachol Mirosh Chodesh. Right before the story. Remember, Yachol Mirosh Chodesh, maybe you start talking about it on Rosh Chodesh, no. Maybe in the middle of the 14th, no, Ba'avor Zeh, on account of this, when you have something to point to that teaches us, when Matzah Mar is in front of you. That would have been the proper time to put in Rabban Gamliel, who says, you have to not just have these things in front of you, but you have to say what they're about. So why is Rabban Gamliel stuck here at the end? That's a big question. Pesach Matzah Mar. And then after that, we go back into a paragraph that again should have been way in the beginning because there was something very similar to it already in the beginning. Bechal dar vadar, chayav adim lirosus atzma kilu hu yatzam Mitzrayim. Every generation, a person has to see themselves as if they left Mitzrayim. Shenemar, as it says, and he brings a proof text, v'higadata lebincha b'yomahu leymar b'avor zeh asa Hashem li b'tzeisi mimitzrayim. And Hashem didn't just save our ancestors, He saved us. And had He not taken us out of Mitzrayim, Hashem saved us also, and He took us out, like He promised us to give us the land. So where should this have been? That a person should see themselves as if they left Mitzrayim. Way back in the beginning. Avadim hayinu leparo b'Mitzrayim, v'ilu lo tzhotzi HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we would all be slaves there now. Why isn't it there, right? That's a big question. It's the same concept. Now, after that, after we announce that we have to see ourselves as if we left Mitzrayim, lefichach, therefore, we have to give halil and hodos. There's two paragraphs here. One is halaluka, and one is betzeis yisrael mi Mitzrayim. And that halil ends the magid, and then we make the bracha al geula seinu, Va'al pedut nafshenu. So we're looking for the key that will make us understand why the Baal Haggadah, who most probably, according to, it's not clear, he's not never officially signed his name to the Haggadah, but it seems that the Baal Haggadah was none other than Rebbe who wrote the Mishnah. So why did the Baal Haggadah set it up in this order? Okay, that's our question. And the answer was brought down by the Malbim, and it's really very simple. The mitzvah to tell your children on this day the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim comes from Shemos, Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Ches. That is the official proof text, the source for the whole mitzvah of Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Shemos, Yud Gimel Ches. The official source for the entire mitzvah of Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim tonight, the night of Pesach. Okay, so what the Malbim explains is that all Rabbi Yehuda Nasi did was follow the exact pattern of the words in that pasuk, elaborating on each word and each and every word. So this is what he says: V'higadata lebincha. Stop. Those are the first two words. That starts from Avadim Hayinu all the way till the She'en Yedei Lishon. That's all part of V'higadata lebincha. It's the parameters of telling your children. Why you have to tell them. Who has to teach. How much you have to teach. To whom you have to teach. When you have to teach, okay? All of that is the definition and an extension of the two words v'higadata lebincha. Okay? That comes to a close with the She'eni Yedei Lishol. Bayom Hahu, which are the next two words in the pasuk, that is associated with Yachol Me'Rosh Chodesh, maybe you start on Rosh Chodesh, Talmud Lomar, Bayom Hahu. No, if the on that day is a little different. It sounds halachic too, but it's not really so much about who you have to teach and who has to teach, and no matter how much you know you have to teach. It's about the mitzvah of when you teach it, specifically Bayom Ahu Bavor Zeh, when matzah and mar are in front of you. So on the two words Bayom Ahu, he brings down Yachol Me'Rosh Chodesh. No, Talmud Lomar Bayom Ahu. Lamar saying, that's the whole story. Mitzchila of Avodah Zarah, etc., the whole story. That develops the word Lamar, to say. What do you say? Ba'avor zeh. So right after you finish with Dayenu, when you've said the whole thing and all the Nisim, and Kama Malos Tovas, how many great things Hashem did, you finish the Lamar section to tell the story. So now you get to Ba'avor zeh. So immediately he puts in Rabban Gamliel, Pesach, Matzah, Marah, Bavor Zeh, on account of these things which you have to point to, and you have to say Pesach, Matzah, Marah, you didn't fulfill your chiyuv, because it's part of the Pasuk, Bavor Zeh. Asa Hashem Li, that's the next chapter, which is, B'chol Dover Darachayev Adim Lirosas Atzmo, Hashem did it for me, therefore I have to see myself as if I went out of Mitzrayim. And the next two words in the Pasuk, B'tzeisi mi-Mitzrayim, that explains why we finish with Hallel, specifically B'tzeisi Yisrael mi-Mitzrayim. So, now the whole thing makes sense. Okay? And it's always right in front of us the entire time, and you never noticed it. That's the scary part. We never noticed it. So all this simply follows the specific pattern of the proof text, the source pasuk, is everybody clear on this? You see how it breaks up? You have all the parts? Shemos, Ches, Yud Gimel. Go look up the Pasuk. Go back to your Haggadah. I'm sorry, Shemos, Yud Gimel, Ches. Go back to the Haggadah. Remember, the Higadata Levincha is from Avadim Hayinu to She'en Yedei Lishol. Okay? Higadata Levincha is Avadim Hayinu to the end of She'en Yedei Lishol. Bayoma, who is Yachol Me'Rosh Chodesh, Lamar is Avadim Hayinu, the whole story till the end of Dayenu and the end of Kol Ma'alos Tovos and all of that. Bavor Zeh is Rabban Gamliel, Pesach Matzah Marah. Asa Hashem Li is Chayav Adim Liros as Atzmo, a person has to see themselves. B'tzeisi Mi'Mitzrayim is the end. B'tzeisi Yisrael Mi'Mitzrayim. Okay. So that is the Seder, which is now exceptionally coherent. How the Haggadah is set up. Now we go into a philosophical idea, okay? And as we said, we're attempting to define the difference, to distinguish between Geula and Pidyon, Goel and Podeh, the five Lashonos, and answer when the Geula actually took place, specifically. When was the moment of the Geula? Because it was a whole process, right? So in order to begin to understand these, we're attempting to define the final bracha of Magid, which ends with Al Geulasenu v'Al Pedus Nafshenu. We just did an entire section of Magid following this pasuk v'Higadat Zalvincha, and it all culminates with these two achievements, Al Geulasenu v'Al Pedus Nafshenu. So we want those words to make sense. So we should know the differences between them, the nuances between the words. So notice the following. Shemos Perek Vav, Psukim Vav, Zayin, and Ches. Okay? This is the source for the five Lashonos of Geula. And we have to read them carefully and notice the difference, a little bit of the differences between them. Shemos Perek Vav, Psukim Vav, Zayin, and Ches. Here they are. Ulachain Emor Libnei Yisrael. Ani Hashem. Number one. Vahotesi Eschem Mitachat Sivlot Mitzrayim. I will take you out from under the burden of Mitzrayim. That's number one. So think. Vahotesi, I'm taking you out from something. From what? The Sivlos, the burdens, the pain, and the suffering. Next. Vihitzalti, and I will save you. What will I save you from? Me? There's a mem there again. From your servitude. So I'm taking, I am taking you out from something, and I'm saving you from something. Okay. Vigaalti eschem, and I will be goel you. That's the word geula. And it doesn't tell us from what. It just tells us with demonstrable acts, with zroa, natuya, and outstretched arm, ushvatim, gdolim, and great wonders and judgments. So the ge'ula is not described as where you're being removed from. It's just a ge'ula which will be demonstrated for everybody to see with awe and wonder and shock, right? And then he continues and he says, v'lakachti eschem, and I take you to me, la'am. Vayisi lachem le'elokim, and I will be your God, and you will know that Hashem is your God that took you out from under the burdens of Egypt. So v'lakachti eschem, I'm taking you not necessarily from something, be careful in this pasuk, but I'm taking you to me to be my nation, which is the reason of I took you out from that to bring you to me. So it's again directional. The first two are directional from what you're being released. Now, after Ga'alti, which is totally different, I'm telling you what you're being, what you're released from that in order to progress forward to something, which is to be my nation. And again, Vehevesi Eschem, and I will bring you El Ha'aretz, to the land. So it's clear here that, that the first two Lashonos are freedom from something, but of course, we don't free ourselves from anything. Just for so that we have no obligations and it's a free-for-all and there's no direction to progress forward. We free ourselves from something only to change direction and move towards something else. It's not freedom from, which we are unique, you know, our history is unique for. It's freedom to. And the two things we're going to are nationhood and land. The point is that Ga'alti stands alone in the middle. I will redeem you with great wonders. That's not about where you're coming from or where you're going to. It's specifically, it's individual. In another, it also, in notice that Ga'alti is the only Lashon that is associated with demonstrable acts of power and force. Even though there were a lot of Nisim associated with the Vehotzesi, taking you out, Vehitzalti, saving you, Vehlakachti, making you my nation, and the Hevesi, and bringing you to Eretz Yisrael, there was Nisim associated with all of them. But the only one that the Torah here clearly mentions being associated with signs and wonders and obvious proof that you're going through Geula is this one, Geula. So what is Geula? So in order to understand Geula, we start with recognizing that there were always three stages to their experience in Egypt. So there are three elements to it. There was Geirus, Avdus, and Pinoy. Okay? Geirus is being, you know, foreigners, being treated as foreigners, not being, this is not their place. They're displaced people. Okay? Then that progressed, also historically, into Avdus, into slavery, which meant they were second class, a serving population, meaning that their destiny was irrelevant. Only how they could promote and further the destiny of the stronger ones, the masters, was the only thing that was relevant. They were serving. They had no destiny of their own. And then it progressed further into Inoy, which is pure suffering, torture, persecution. By the way, Aaron, Miriam, and Moshe were born at these three different stages. Okay, Aaron was born at a stage where they were still considered Gerim, but not yet the depths of the Avdus. And Miriam was born at the, her name is Marar, when Vayimaru es Chayehem. That's when it already progressed into the Inoy section. I'm sorry, the Inoy. No, I'm sorry. Aaron was during during the Avdus, and Miriam was the Inoy, and Moshe came, of course, to release them from both of those. In any case, so the Inoy wasn't till the end. I'm sorry, Aaron was in the Avdus, and when Miriam was born, that was the beginning of the Inoy. The Inoy wasn't the entire time, the suffering, utter persecution. That was towards the end. Forget it, Gerus. Forget Gerus. Gerus was from the very beginning. I'm sorry, Gerus, that was a mistake. It was Avdus and Inoy. Okay. In any case, they went through Gerus, Avdus, Inoy. By the way, a little bit of a tangent here. Rav Hirsch explains that Tzach, Adash, Bachav, in terms of these three stages, each time they received a punishment for what they had done to the Jews, they received it in a group of three, which follow the pattern of Gerus, Avdus, Inoy. So, for example, Tzach, Dam Tzvardei Akinim, that is in punishment for Gerus, Avdus, Inoy. So, how does that work? Gerus is that they don't belong here. You're foreigners. This isn't your place. So the Dam taught them that actually this land is hospitable to the Jews, and it's you that the land doesn't want to be hospitable to. You get blood and they get water. So actually you're the Gerim and you don't belong here, and the land is not producing for you, but it is for them. The land is welcoming them. Then they went to Tzvardeya. Tzvardeya was in retribution for making the Jews feel second class, servants. Okay, they had no status. So here the frogs obviously did not distinguish the same way the Egyptians did. The frogs started in Paro's palace, okay, and then on to his nobles and all his important people, which means to show in the eyes of the frogs, you're the ones who have no status. We're jumping all over the place in your bed, in your clothes, in your oven, your bread. We don't have any sense of deference to you. You don't have any status in our eyes. However, the Jews, no, we don't touch them. They have status. We stay away from them. We don't interfere with them. So that was represented the Avdus. And the Inoy, the persecution, was just kinim, just pure, simple persecution. It has its reasons too, but it's just to make them suffer. Then came, Arov Dever Shchin. Arov is the wild animals actually left the jungle. And they rampaged in the cities. So if you read some of the Midrashim, they tell you that the people had nowhere to go, so they ran to the jungles. So in other words, this is Gerus. You think this is your land and you have a home here? No, you don't have a home here. The land doesn't want you. You go to the jungle. You're the foreigners, and the Jewish people, they belong here. The animals didn't touch them. Avdus is all the domesticated work animals died. So wait a minute. If the Jews are not working anymore and you just lost all your beasts of burden, who's doing the work now? You. So that's Avdus. That's slavery. The Egyptians were turned into physical laborers. And then came Inoy, which is Shchin. Shchin, by the way, is what we call leprosy. Not halachic leprosy from Lashon Hara. But what the world calls leprosy, which is sometimes misinterpreted and considered tzaras, that's Shchin. And Barad Arbe Chosha. So Barad again is Gerus. That here the environment is turning against you. Run away. You can't be outdoors in this land. It's not your land. It'll strike you down. But the Jewish people, they could. Okay? Arbe, what about that? So, again, servitude. Not only did you lose your work, your serving class, not only did your work, your beasts of burden die, so now your food is all consumed, and the only way you're going to live and you're going to survive is if you start yourself from scratch, planting, growing, trying to get your country going. You're now ultimate avadim, servants. And then Inoy is Choshech, and Makos Bechoros is in a separate category. So anyway, Hirsch says that's the Tzach Adash Bachav. Otherwise, it's not exactly a stroke of genius to say, Dam Tzvardei Akinim the Tzach. Okay? You like divide them into three. Like, well, there's got to be something more here. So this is one approach. In any case, it went through Gerus, Avdus, Inoy. So the Gra says, when you look at the Lashonos of Geula, HaKadosh Baruch Hu releases them from each level, but starting backwards. First from the Inoy, persecution. Then from the servitude, and then from the Gerus. So if you want to know what Geula is, you have to look at Gerus. So here's how it goes. V'hotzeisi eschem I will take you out, mitachas sivlos, from the burdens. That's the inoy, the persecution. V'hitzalti eschem, I will save you from avdus. That's the servitude. And then v'ga'alti eschem, with great wonders, that's from the gerus. So if you want to know what ge'ula is, we have to focus on what a ger is. What a stranger in a strange land is, that's what changed, and that was the essence of the ge'ula. The hotzeitzi and the hitzalti, the persecution and the servitude, that was physical labor, that was their situation, that was their plight. Hashem released them from their physical plight of having to work, having to serve. But ge'ula is not about releasing from your physical plight. Ge'ula is about changing your identity. Are you a ger, a strange person, a displaced person in someone else's land, or are you a person with a home, a person with a place, a person with an anchor? So it's not about removing or saving you from your plight. It's about your identity. Ge'ula is about identity. It's not about freedom from any particular situation. Which explains to us that it explains to us a number of interesting nuances that we have to recognize about ge'ula. For example, ge'ula is always used as a verb with a subject. For example, go'el Yisrael, you redeemed B'nai Yisrael. Okay? Or, for example, in Vayikra, Perek Chafei, Pasuk Chafei, talking about someone who had to sell their field, a relative has to come, and he has to identify himself as a relative and say and buy back the fields, and he's called Ga'alo, his Goel, okay? Hakarov Elov, who is close to him, who's going to buy back his fields. And there are many usages of Goel, where Goel is a where Goel is an act of redeeming something that should be mine, and for temporarily it's out of my hands. My field is out of my hands. Okay, it really should be brought back to me. Goel Hadam is someone who stands up for the relative who was killed. In Rus, the Goel is the person that will reclaim this family as theirs. Okay, you will reclaim someone. You're a reclaimer. What's interesting is, when you think about Goel, what's the most important aspect of Ge'ula or the Goel? What's the most important aspect is that the Goel is a relative. That's the concept of Goel. The Goel is a relative. What matters here is that there is a Goel to redeem a field or a person or a widow or a nation. There's a Goel, and he's going to come to the aid of his relative who's in a desperate situation or needs redemption. So it's always a verb. I'm going to redeem something. Because why? Because I'm the redeemer, because I'm related, because it's mine. I take interest in it. So when you talk about a goel, you're talking about that what's most important is who the redeemer is. And because of who he is, that's what gives him the right to step in. And he must step in. That's the goel. So when you have people that are gerim, what does a ger mean? It's not about the actual plight, the working, it's about status. When the Jewish people were in Mitzrayim, and they were gerim, and they were treated like gerim, foreigners, and they began to see themselves exactly in the same light, which means to say, they saw themselves as a people abandoned to forces greater than them, okay? How do we know that they were hopeless, that they had given up, you know, they didn't think that they had any status themselves, that they had a right to even imagine that they were an independent people who had their own future, their own dreams? Very simple. Amram and Yocheved. Let's give up. Let's not have any more children. What's the point? We're here as a servant class, so why should we produce more servants for them? So forget about it. It wasn't about them. There was no future. There was no independent identity. We're just living for them, and we don't want to live for them, so we're giving up. We'll all die out. That's the proof that the concept way before the Avdus had nothing to do with the Avdus and nothing to do with the Inoy. The concept was, we have no independent identity as our own nation. So what do we need to live for? So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Goel Klal Yisrael, when he redeems them, the most important aspect of this is what happens in our head. He already took them out of the Inoy and he already took them out of the Avdus. So they're not working anymore and they're not being persecuted anymore. But something hasn't changed yet. their doubt that they have any real identity as a nation that's important. What he has to do is he has to come in and say, I am your goel. I am here to extract you from that poison mindset because you belong to me. I'm responsible for you. I have expectations from you. You're not nobody, abandoned, and rejected. You're actually my closest of kin, and I intend to take responsibility for you and gather you up and bring you back and give you a and tell you what you're here for. So just that alone, okay, changes everything in the minds of the Jewish people, and that's why the Geula has to come b'mora gadol, with great judgments, with great miracles, with an outstretched arm, because it's all about demonstrating who is the goel. It's not about punishing the Egyptians or releasing them from persecution or changing their plight, okay, or saving them. It's all about I am the goel. And when you know who the goel is, you're going to know that this people are not an average people. You know, you're going to know this people is not a nothing people. I will gather them up. I will take responsibility for them. I have plans for them. So the Geula always comes with Nisim, and mostly it tells us that the moment of Geula then was not when they actually left Mitzrayim the next morning. The moment of Geula was when it became clear to the Mitzrayim who was their Goel. The moment of Makos Bechoros, when the Egyptians said to the Jews, go, leave, go serve Hashem, that night, before they actually left, that was the moment of the Geula, when they said, leave us, go serve Hashem. However, Pidyon, and this is, by the way, these ideas come from Rabbi Lopiansky in a book called Timepieces. Pidyon, there's some nuances here. Pidyon, as we say, pedus nafshenu, that is an adjective, pedus nafshenu, an adjective describing a subject. Our souls went through a pidyon. They were nifteh. So what does that mean? Something happened to our souls. Now it's a little bit similar. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik explains this in a similar vein, but it's a bit of a nuance. The first one, Geula, is Hashem declaring, I am the Goel. And I'm going to prove it to you. The pidyon is what happens to us when we become aware that Hashem is the Goel. Our souls, our identity, goes through a pidyon, as in pidyon haben, where our status is changed. That's what happens in a pidyon haben, right? The status of the child is changed. When we talk about pidyon, we're talking about a change in status. So, from us seeing ourselves as a meaningless people, a serving class, someone who's secondary in terms of has no role to play in history, now we see ourselves as B'nei B'chor Yisrael, a future, a story, goals to accomplish. Our status has totally changed in our eyes and in everybody else's eyes. We will never again be, no matter how many times we're persecuted, never again will our status change. Never again will we imagine that we're irrelevant. Now we know that once Hashem redeemed and showed us that I am the Goel, now we know who we are. That's the pidyon, pedut nafshenu. Our nefesh, our spirit, our whole sense of who we are has been changed. And that doesn't need open miracles because it's not demonstrating who the Goel is. It's about a subtle change in our minds and in our understanding and how the world sees us. So here you see, and by the way, there are proof texts. Every time we use the word Goel, we always focus on who the Goel is. Two proofs in Shmona Esrei. Number one, from the Bracha of Magen Avram. Umevi Goel libnei b'neihem. He brings redemption to the grandchildren. Leman Shemo, on account of his own name. For himself. So everyone should know who their Goel is. Okay, also in the Bracha of Ga'al Yisrael. Ga'alenu mehera, please once more be goel us. Come to our aid, show the world you're our goel. Leman shemecha, on account of your name. Let the world see who is the goel of Klal Yisrael. Who's standing behind us, even if it's been invisible for a long time. Now, we know that there was a time in Jewish history that it was obvious that Hashem is our goel. But for the last couple thousand years, it's not as obvious. So we take the pattern of Yosef, although Hashem did not in any open way, and we've spoken about this, do Nisim or even speak to Yosef, he wasn't among the Nevi'im. What we know about Yosef, which was made him who he was, Shem Hashem, the name of Hashem was always on his lips. He always said, Baruch Hashem, if Hashem wants, only my success is only Hashem, Hashem will interpret your dreams. In other words, in his mind, Hashem was his goel. Hashem was standing a looming shadow behind him, ready to come and protect him and guide him and make sure everything worked out okay. But although Hashem didn't make it obvious that he was the goel, Yosef knew that the goel was Hashem. And that's our situation also, to always affirm and be sure that we have a very powerful goel who can come in at any moment and take and stand up for us. But through Gullus, the ball is more in our court to affirm that, to be convinced of that, although HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't do it or hasn't done it in such open and obvious ways, but of course in subtle ways and hidden ways it's always happening. That's Purim and that's all the Nisim since that time. In any case, David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Karva el nafshi ge'ala. The concept of ge'ula is karva. It's that you are close to my nefesh. You're close to me. You're my closest of kin. You'll stand up for me. And that security that we have is what gives us the strength to persevere, despite the fact that it's not always obvious. So what we're saying here is, and these ideas now are something we've spoken about in the past, that helps us understand also why there's a halacha in Shemoneh Esrei. When you make the bracha of Goel Yisrael, you immediately start Shemoneh Esrei afterwards, because there's a rule, you have to put together Geula and Tfila, Smichas Geula L'Tfila, and Rav Yashav Ber Soloveitchik. In a classic, in a tour de force, in a classic shir that's been reprinted and everything, and it's recorded, but it's very difficult to hear it. It has a two-part series called The Philosophy of Prayer. It's difficult to hear, but if you can get your hands on it, it's just a treat for the ears and the mind just to hear the presentation. He develops this idea of smichas ge'ula l'tfila. It's a very famous idea. We'll go into it now just for a moment. Rav Yashav Ber Soloveitchik. Now, he says the following. The concept of ge'ula is extending what we've just spoken about. The Zohar says that Pesach, and Avner talks about this, many speak about this, Pesach could be divided into Pesach, the mouth speaks. The Zohar says that speech was in Golus, and speech was redeemed through Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, saying that speech was in Golus needs explanation. Notice that the leader, the redeemer, Moshe, right, the representative of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to bring us out of Mitzrayim, also had a problem with his speech, and his speech was, so to speak, in Golus, and his speech was redeemed too. When was Moshe's speech redeemed? Vayered Hashem al Ahar, Vayal Moshe el Elokim. Then Moshe, after that experience, Eila Hadvar Meshadiber Moshe. That, instead of being, you know, Lo Ish Devarim Anochi, I'm not a man of words, then Eila Hadvar Meshadiber Moshe. Look, this is it, the whole Sefer Devarim. This is what Moshe said. Speech went through a transition. When we say that speech was in Golus, and speech was redeemed, what we mean to say is that the people of Israel, Bnei Yisrael, weren't a speaking people. If you look at the whole Perek Aleph, it describes their plight, and you never hear a word uttered from Klal Yisrael. There's no cry. There's no protest. The first mention of anybody making a sound is Moshe in the Teva. The Nar is Boche. He's crying. Now, there are forms of there are sounds we make. There are sounds that are just expressions of pain, which are wails, you know, or blood-curdling screeches from pain. But we know, and unfortunately we've learned, we've seen, that even in terms of real physical pain, a human being can become anesthetized. They can become immune to pain and not scream anymore and not cry anymore. Physical pain. However, there's something beyond physical pain, and that is spiritual pain. That is emotional pain, and that's not a blood-curdling screech. That is a groan. That is a sigh of knowing things aren't right and things can be, should be improved and things have to change. After Moshe, who's the first to cry, the next story we hear about is that he goes and he kills the Mitzri. And then he has that little altercation with Dathan and Aviram. Moshe, by doing that, interestingly enough, is restoring to the people some type, the beginnings of speech, because they were speechless because they had so accepted their lot as meaningless, an irrelevant serving class, who were there to promote the interests of the more powerful, the more advanced, the more dominant, but they themselves had no role. As Rav Soloveitchik says, they saw themselves on the periphery of history, not in the center of history. No story to tell, no goals to speak of, no objectives. Peripheral, meaningless and irrelevant. And they had therefore no speech, nothing to speak for, nothing to express. Moshe began to give them back the beginnings of sound, of speech, by teaching them through his interactions with those little episodes that this isn't just, and this isn't right, and you don't deserve to be treated like this, and this isn't your lot in life. There's something better, there's something more. Things have to change. And after that, you see, if you go in the Chumash, they began to groan. They began to realize, no words yet, but they began to realize there might be something more for them. It took a long time. It was a very hard job for Moshe to try to make them aware of what exactly was in store for them. What kind of grand future was waiting for them? Who they were? What the potential they had? Moshe had to bring that back to them, had to fill them up with dreams and ideals, goals, and aspirations, a vision of who they could be. That was part of Moshe's job, to inspire them. And that final inspiration comes with the Geula, when Hashem makes it clear, I am their Goel, which started with the Makos, but didn't reach its full, powerful, demonstration till Makos Bechoros. That's when it became obvious who these people are, and who they're my people, B'ni Bechori Yisrael, I'm the Goel. And that's when they began to speak, and then they really spoke, comes the Shira, and everything else. So he says like this, when a person knows where they are, and where they can get to, where they're heading, they can express the difference between where I am now, and where I want to be. And that's clear in their head. They know what the objectives are, what's in the future for them, what they can reach, what levels they can reach, not only as a nation, as an individual. That is a geula. And it comes from knowing who has expectations from us. That's what it comes. It doesn't come from ourselves. It comes from knowing who the goel is. And the goel expects this from us and set this up for us and embedded within us the ability to do this and who we are. So that awareness comes together. That's called geula. We are no longer gerim, because a ger is somebody who is subsumed by the host culture. That's why we were even called in galus, in Eretz Yisrael, under the Hellenistic regime, in the Hanukkah story. That was a galus, because although we were in Israel, we were completely submerged in the Hellenistic culture. We lost ourselves. So the Geula gives us back who we are and allows us to daven, because the essence of tefillah is bakasha. But it's not the bakasha of hav, hav, gimme, gimme. Give me this and give me that and give me food and give me a house and give me stuff. The real bakasha that we're asking for, the essence of tefillah, which is why I have to put Geula next to tefillah, is what we're really asking for, is that we can achieve our potential, achieve the goals that HaKadosh Baruch Hu imagines we can achieve. If Hashem has trust, we can achieve them, so we should. That we can get to our highest, our greatest expression of ourselves as a people, individuals, and as a nation. And that's why we always realize that geula and tefillah go together. That's the essence of tefillah, to bring out oneself. But the main thing here is that what happened in Mitzrayim is that the Jewish people went from the periphery of history to the center of history. from a non-speaking people, we are now the ultimate, the quintessential nation that is a speaking people. In other words, we have the most important story to tell. Our story, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the mitzvah to tell it, is the most important story in human history. We now went from a people that had nothing to say to people that what we say changes everybody else and leads everybody else. We went from the periphery of history to the center of history to the driving force of history, from a non-speaking people to Pesach, to a people whose words are important, who the story we tell is important. It changes everybody, it gives everybody a direction, and it all begins, it all centers around knowing who is the Goel, and how that we changed our status in our own eyes. So the bracha we end with is Al Geula Seinu Val Pedus Nafshenu. Our Geula, who is our Goel, and how our nefesh was altered, and our status in our own eyes is changed. And this doesn't just go for the nation, this is also for an individual. But again, it comes to an individual, we don't sit back and say, Hashem, be my Goel. We have to know that Hashem demonstrated that He is the Goel numerous times, and that's part of our emuna, that although He's not necessarily demonstrating it at this second in this particular case, He still remains the Goel, and we fill ourselves with the trust that we have behind us, as we said, like a looming, huge shadow of a powerful Goel who will, for sure, come to our aid at the right time of His choosing, and until that time we have emuna, we have trust that we can depend on that, and then we can find our own strength. So we will deal with everything we have to deal with. Okay, everyone, have a wonderful Pesach.
There's something really that would go very well with what you just said.
Yes,
with the Hadar.